ಮಾತಾ ಮಧ್ಯ ಲೀಲಾ 24:76 ಆನ್ವರ್ಡ್ಸ್. ಥ್ಯಾಂಕ್ ಯು ಪ್ರಭುಜಿ.
Thank you so much, Mataji, and please forgive me. I am a few minutes late. We have some power outage, so the power just came back in time. So we'll start now.
Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Yeah. Give me just 1 minute, I'm just pulling up the verse.
Prabhuji, one question. Are you on the live, Prabhu?
Yes, I'm going live on the YouTube also. So we will be reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila chapter 24 and we'll start from verse number 76.
I'm going to do the lesson.
Please bear with me, give me just 1 minute.
76.
अहम एवासम हे अहम एवासमेवाग्रे नान्यद् यत् सत् असत् परम् पश्चादहम् यदेतच्च यो वशिष्येतसोऽस्मि अहम्.
Translation and comfort by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. Prior to the cosmic creation, only I exist and no phenomena exist, either gross, subtle or primordial. After creation, only I exist in everything, and after annihilation, only I remain eternally. Purport. This verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.33 was spoken by Lord Krishna. For an explanation, see Adi Leela 1.53.
Om Abhyanati Nirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुर्वैष्णवांसं श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपदा सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचना गौरंगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये पांचाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारी जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Prior to the cosmic creation, only I exist and no phenomena exist, either gross, subtle, or primordial. After creation, only I exist in everything, and after annihilation, only I remain eternally. Hare Krishna, I would like to thank all the organizers for giving me an opportunity to serve you all. And I'm very sorry I was a few minutes late because, in India, power just runs out at the perfect timing. Just before the call was supposed to start, the power ran out and it came back again in a few minutes. So I'm very sorry for the delay. So this verse that we are discussing today, and today we'll be discussing a few more verses. So the verse that we are discussing currently, chapter 24, verse number 76. This has already been discussed earlier in the Adi Leela. Prabhupada mentioned it in the purport also, that in the Adi Leela, chapter 1, verse 53, I'm sure you all would have had a very nice discussion about it. So I thought we won't spend too much time on it and we'll move forward on the other verses. But just for a refresher, this is the first verse of the Chatur Saloki Srimad Bhagavatam verses that was spoken by Krishna to Brahmaji. These four verses, they say, is the essence, it's the essence of the whole Bhagavatam, which Krishna spoke it in just four verses. In the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, verse chapter number 9, starting from 33 through 36, these are the four verses. And this is the first verse in which Krishna is establishing how he exists always, even before creation, during creation, after annihilation, again when new creation comes about. Krishna, this personality, is eternally existent. Eternally existent. That is what when we say Govindam Adi Purusham. He is the original. He has no source. He's always existent. And he establishes this so many times in the Bhagavad Gita also. Matta paratara anyat kinchit asti dhananjaya. That Arjuna, there is There is no truth. There is nothing greater than me. It's just me. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. In so many places, he explains, I am the source of everything. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Matta Sarvam Pravartate. Mai Adhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. So all through Bhagavad Gita, he establishes, and then even in Bhagavatam here, directly he is telling Brahmaji that how he, the personality Krishna, is always existent, he is always the cause of all causes. And then again in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also we see, in the Adi Leela, in the 5th chapter, it is said, Sarva Avatari Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan. He is the Swayam Bhagavan, he is the Avatari from whom all the avatars come. And then how does then, if he is the one original, and how does all this happen? How does whole creation and everything happen? He explains, Tahara Dvitiya Deha Shri Balaram. So he just expands Balaram. And this Balaram, and Prabhupada has explained, as you all must have heard in the Adi Leela, that how Balaram and Krishna are not different. Except for the color, there is no difference in Krishna and Balaramji. So he just expands and then he tells, okay, Balaramji, now you do take care of this whole creation and dissolution and now the whole cycle that's going on is all being taken care of by Balaram. Krishna himself is in Vrindavan enjoying. And then in Chaitanya Charitamrita they explain how Sri Balaram Gosai Mula Sankarshan, you know, how then Balaramji expands, you have the first Chaturvyuha, then you have Sankarshan, then you have Narayan, then you have the second Chaturvyuha from whom, you know, Karnodakshi Ocean, Karnodakshi Vishnu comes, and then the whole hierarchy is so wonderfully explained in the Adi Leela. But Krishna himself is totally aloof. He is in Vrindavan just enjoying. So this verse, as I said, it's already been discussed in Adi Leela. So we will not, I'm sure, wonderful explanations have been given by other speakers in the past. And even as I said, it's in Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll move on to the next verse. So this is verse number 77.
Atma Shabde Kahe Krishna Bhritva Swarupa Sarva Vyapak Sarva Sakshi Parama Swarupa.
The word Atma, self, indicates the highest truth, Krishna. He is the all-pervasive witness of all, and he is the supreme form. So see, in the previous verse, it was explained, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established how Krishna, the person, the personality, he is always existing. And as I said, he is the, you know, cause of all causes. He is always in his original form in Goloka Vrindavan. Now in this next verse, we are getting another understanding of Krishna. He is the all-pervasive witness of all, and he is the supreme form. So he starts off by saying, Atma Shabde Kahe Krishna. So here, Atma word is being established, or not translated exactly, it's indicating whom? Krishna. Now, very surprisingly, this word Atma, this term Atma, if we analyze, it has been explained in so many ways. See, there's in teachings of Lord Chaitanya. If you have seen in teachings of Lord Chaitanya, very interestingly, in chapter 16, Prabhupada says, another meaning of the word Atma is nature. So what does nature mean? And Prabhupada explains in that part, in that section. Nature means that's the swabhav. That's the swabhav of the living entity, of the person, of the jiva. Atma, we know, it gets compared to a jiva. But he says in that context over there, it means the nature. And he explains what is the nature of the jiva in its original state, in its not contaminated state, in its purified state. Jivar Sharupai Krishna Nitya Das, eternal servant of the Lord. And this swabhav in its conditioned state, when it comes into the material conditioning, then the nature of that person changes. Then he wants to be the enjoyer, he wants to be the controller, he wants to be the proprietor. It's the same Atma. So see, now here Atma is being referred or being explained as how? Nature. Just hold on, because I'll give you some wonderful examples of how Prabhupada in different places has explained what Atma can refer to. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 7. Atma Rama Samabhyasat. Here, Prabhupada says Atma means the self, and Arama means to take pleasure in oneself. So here, Prabhupada says Atma is being referred as who? The Jivatma. And Arama means what? The pleasure that the living entity gets in itself, in oneself, means in its connectivity to Krishna. So here, Prabhupada refers to Atma as the self, Jiva. Another example, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, where Karna Muni is getting married to Devahuti. In that purport, in the sixth verse purport, you will see Prabhupada says, over here, Atma is referred to as the body, soul, or mind, all three. He says there are times when this Atma, body can be referred to as Atma, soul can be referred to as Atma, mind can be referred to as Atma. It depends in what context this term Atma is being used. That is why all these shastras, to understand on our own, it is sometimes difficult. You may be a Sanskrit master because you know Atma, what it means. But in what context that word Atma is being used is very important to understand. And that we can only understand when we get it from our acharyas, like Prabhupada, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and all. They explain to us that in this particular verse, in this particular pastime, Atma is being used in what context. And again, there is another verse in Bhagavatam, chapter 4, canto 4. Anasuya has given birth to three sons. She is the wife of Atri Muni. You all must have read and heard about it. So there is a verse which says, Atmesha Brahma Sambhavam. So here Prabhupada says, Atma is referring to whom? The super soul. Because she had given birth to three kids, three sons. The first Atma Esha. So, supreme soul, super soul is who? Vishnu. Brahma is Brahma. Atma over here is the supreme soul, Esha is Shiva and Brahma is Brahmaji. So, in that purport, Prabhupada explained how Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all three have incarnated as the three sons of Atri, of Anasuya. So, here he says Atma is referring to the Paramatma or the super soul. Who is the principal, who is the super soul in all Atmas, in every living entity. So, the point that I am trying to make is that the same term Atma can be referred in so many different, as we saw, in so many different ways. And here, in this verse, Atma is being established as what? Highest truth. Who? Krishna. Atma Shabda Kohe Krishna Bhattava Swarup. He is the all-pervasive witness of all. So here, like even the same thing has been explained in Bhagavad Gita. Over here, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, he is the all-pervasive witness of all. He is witnessing everything of everybody. See, like same thing Krishna explained in Bhagavad Gita, right? Ishvara sarva-bhutana riddeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayam sarva-bhutani Yantra Rudani Mayaya, 1861, right? Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishtati. I am residing in everyone's heart. See, this is, we need to understand, Krishna has taken such a strategic position in our life. It's just like, in your houses, you'll have these cameras, which is monitoring your house whole time. So they fix those cameras at very strategic points. They don't just put it anywhere. They know exactly where to put, where people can come in from, where people can go out from. Strategic points. Krishna has taken the most strategic point in our heart. That is why they say, Krishna sees from inside out. What do we see? We see from outside him. See, we are seeing a person from outside. We don't know inside what he is thinking. That is why I think I told in my last class also, we should never judge a person by his actions. Another person, we should judge him by his intent. Because you don't know why he is doing what he is doing. So don't judge a person by their actions. But Krishna, he knows the intent. Why? Because he's in the heart. So he sees the intent why we are doing what we are doing. And then another verse also in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya chaham hriti sanivishto matta simriti jnanam apohanam cha. Same thing, he says, I am residing in everyone's heart. From me come intelligence, remembrance and forgetfulness. And then in another verse again he says, Upadrishta anumanta cha bharta bhokta maheshwara paramatmeti chapo te dehesmen purusha paraha. That purusha paraha, he said, as the paramatma in everybody's heart, what am I doing? The same thing what is being told in this class, in this verse. And the upadrishta, I'm overseeing everything that this jivatma, this person does. And then I permit, I give the permission for him to do whatever he wants to. Anumanta cha. Bharata, I'm the master, I'm the bhokta, I'm the enjoyer. Maheshwara. Paramatmeti chapi ukto, dehesmin purusha para. So same thing what Krishna established in Bhagavad Gita and all these verses, here Krishna is establishing to Brahmani. Same. The fact is the same. He saying he is the all-pervasive witness of all and he is the supreme form. We go to the next verse, verse number 78. I'm trying to come to one particular verse where our whole discussion for today will be placed. Adatadvacha matavyat atmahi paramo hari. Hari, the personality of Godhead, is the all-pervasive original source of everything. He is therefore the super soul of everything. So it's more or less, there's a purport of one line. This is a quotation from the Bhavartha Deepika, Sridhar Swami's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's establishing the same thing what we saw in the previous verse, how Krishna, Hari, he is all-pervasive, he's residing in everybody's heart, as he is therefore the super soul of everything. He knows everything. We'll go to the next verse, verse number 79.
Shri Krishna Prapti Hetu Trivida Sadhana Jnana Yoga Bhakti Tinera Vithikala Prathaka Lakshana.
There are three ways to attain the lotus feet of the absolute truth, Krishna. There is the process of philosophical speculation, that is Dhyan, the practice of mystic yoga, and the execution of devotional service, bhakti. Each of these has its different characteristics. So we are going to stop here, and this was the verse that I was trying to come to. So in the previous three verses, we saw how it's established this Krishna is the supreme. He is always existent. He is residing in everyone's heart. He's all pervasive, he knows everything. Now the question that comes is, how to attain this, like in this verse it said, there are three ways to attain the lotus feet of the absolute truth, Krishna. How to attain this Krishna? How to approach him? So, of course, everybody has heard, read in Bhagavad Gita also, that there are three ways of approaching the absolute truth. Jnana, yoga and bhakti. These are the three ways by which the absolute truth can be approached and be attained. And each of these has its different characteristics. So I'm sure a lot of you all, the bell might be ringing into a lot of you all that since the last time I gave a class, we spoke about the characteristics of Bhakti Yoga, and because we could not complete it, see, this is totally Krishna's arrangement. When I was seeing the verses that were assigned to me, I was thinking that, I don't know whether I'll be able to continue that part where we had left off last week. But when I came to this verse, I saw like, wow, this is so amazing. Like, you know, this verse is just exactly where we can say where we had left off, because it's also talking about characteristics of Bhakti Yoga. So what we can do or what we will do is we'll talk very briefly about the characteristics of the other two processes also, since it's mentioned here, Jnana, Yoga, and then we will continue our continue and complete our discussion on the characteristics of Bhakti Yoga. So first he says Gyan Yoga. And all of you all know also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken so much about Gyan, he's spoken so much about Dhyan Yoga, about Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. And we all know the ladder, that how Bhakti Yoga is the topmost in the ladder rung. And Prabhupada so nicely explained also Bhakti Yoga is, you know, if you want to go to a 200th story, 200th floor, there are two ways you can get to the 200th level. One is you get into the elevator, press the 200th button and you are in on the 200th level. And then there's another process. You go by the stairs. You go 1, 2, 50, 75, 95, 100, 150, and then you reach 200. That process, the process of the staircase, is the Gyan process, the Dhyan process. It's a very, you know, very precarious also, but it takes forever. Bhakti Yoga is the direct process. And we'll see also and we'll try to understand how and why. So, first we'll talk very briefly, not in very detail about Gyan Yoga. We'll talk very briefly about Dhyan Yoga and then we'll get into Bhakti Yoga because most of us are practitioners of Bhakti Yoga, so that's where our interest also lies. But then it doesn't even cost to know about Gyan and Dhyan. So, Gyan Yoga, as everybody knows, it's a philosophical process where by accumulating Gyan, knowledge, it's an analytical process where you are analyzing. You're using a lot of your intelligence. And then the whole process, how does it work? It's like a process of negation. Meti, meti, na eti, na eti, na eti, na eti. So the expectation is that I will first negate out everything and then finally what is left is the absolute truth. And in Bhagavatam, in the Shiva Bhagavatam first canto, it is explained, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagwan iti, Shabjate. That these are the three aspects of the absolute truth that can be approached and achieved. So Gyan, the Gyanis, what is their goal or what do they achieve? The Brahman realization. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagwaniti, Shabdyate. So through knowledge, they can get an understanding of this Brahman aspect of the absolute truth. We won't get into too many details because I'm sure a lot of you all have heard and understood it. So but this is primarily how Gyan Yoga works. But what is the real goal? What is the real, I won't say characteristic, what is the real, where should Gyan bring you to? Krishna explained in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanvan Mam Prapatyante. This is the perfection of Gyan. Gyan, knowledge must bring you to this platform of what? Mam prapadyante. Who? To surrender, to take shelter of Krishna. Krishna is speaking. Mam means me and he says prapadyante, surrendering unto me. But he says for this Gyani, unfortunately, it takes very long time. Bahunam janmanam ante, he is saying. This Gyan one wakes up to the fact that I need to surrender to whom? To Krishna. Why? Because now he comes to the understanding of what? Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. He wakes up, wow, oh, really? Yes, it is this Vasudeva, it is this Krishna, Sarvam Iti, who is the cause of everything and he is the source of everything. I need to surrender to him. But in case of Gyan, as I said, first level, fourth level, 50th level, then 60th level, then 100th level, then finally you will reach. And that's why there are so many distractions. On the fifth level, there might be a beautiful mall and you get distracted and you get into some store and you forget also what your goal is. That is why Krishna is saying here, Bahunam Janmanam Ante. For the Jnani, it takes lifetimes to understand that I have to surrender to whom? Krishna. Vasudeva Sarvam. And then he says, Sa Mahatma Sudurlabha. Durlabha is very rare. And but Krishna says, Sudurlabha. Very Durlabha. Like we have Subhadra, right? All auspicious. So this is, Sudurlabha means all, it's very, 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 very rare. This Mahatma, Sumahatma, who's come to this platform of understanding that I need to surrender to Krishna. And see, we see Krishna spoke it, and then Krishna established it also.
When he appears as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
See, when he appears as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was younger, Nimai, he was such a scholar. He could defeat anybody. Rather, he would establish one fact, and then whatever fact he established, he would counteract that. He would defeat that fact and establish another fact. And then again, that fact what he established, he would defeat that and establish a fourth fact. I just don't know how he, of course, he's the Supreme Lord, so he can do it. Nimai, right? And then we know how he defeated this big Vijay Pandit Keshav Kashmiri who came. Now, this same Nimai, right, when he becomes Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he comes on this, of course, he's the Lord, but he's in the role of a devotee, so he's teaching us that from this Jnana platform, when he comes to the platform of bhakti, when he gets the taste of this bhakti, he gets the bhakti taste, then what happens? This same Nimai, who was so learned, he's standing in front of whom? Prakashanand Saraswati, who's a scholar, and he's telling Nimai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what are you doing? You're a sannyasi, why are you, just so sentimentally chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. You should study the Vedanta. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knows everything. So what did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reply to Prakashanand Saraswati? It's so important to understand. I'm sure you all have already gone through this, all this is in the Adi Leela. Prabhu kohe suno Shripad ihara karana guru more murkha dekhi korilo shasan. He's saying, oh Shripad, I'll tell you the reason why I'm so sick. All the time only chanting Hare Krishna and I'm not studying Vedanta. Guru more murkha dekhi. My guru told me, you are murkh, you are fool number one, what you will study Vedanta. Guru more murkha dekhi korilo shasan. He shouted at me. You know what? You will study Bhagavad Vedanta. You just simply chant Hare Krishna. Murkha tumi. His guru telling him, murkha tumi. Tomara nahiko Vedanta adhikar. You don't have adhikar of studying Vedanta. Because you are a murkha, you are a fool. Krishna mantra japo shada. He mantra sha. You just chant Hare Krishna. That is for you. Now, are you understanding? The same Nimai who was a scholar, he was master in the Vedanta. But when he comes to the platform of devotional, pure devotional service, this is what Krishna is saying, that Bahunam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan, the Jnani, he comes to this platform of understanding Vasudeva Sarvamiti. He tells Prakashanand Saraswati that now I only need to chant Krishna's name. I only need to take shelter of Krishna. I don't need anything else. The same Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we know in another pastime, when another great Sarvabhama Bhattacharya for 7 days, he was explaining whole Vedanta to him, right? And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just listening. And then at the end of 7 days, Sarvabhama Bhattacharya is asking Mahaprabhu, you're not asking any questions, are you understanding what I'm telling you? What an answer Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave. He said, the whole Vedanta, everything is so crystal clear, but your explanation is just like a cloud covering the sun. Right? So now, we need to understand, it's not that Jnana is not needed, because sometimes you might say, oh, Prabhu, but even in our Bhakti Yoga, we are studying so much, we are reading books, we are trying to understand the philosophy. Yes. Yes, because Prabhupada also said that religion without philosophy is fanaticism. If we try to practice devotional service, Krishna consciousness without philosophy, without an understanding, then it will just be fanatic. We can see, right, in so many different religions we see around the world today, because they don't have an understanding of the philosophy that was established by them, by their leader only, on fanaticism today. So yes, jnana is needed, but we have to be very careful. Is that jnana bringing us to this platform of Vasudeva Sarvamiti? is it bringing us to the platform of Mark Prapadyante? Is it bringing us to the platform of surrendering to Krishna? Or unless we want to wait for lifetimes. We don't want to wait for lifetimes. Prabhupada said, this life. It's this life we want to finish off our business and go away. That is why one time Srila Prabhupada was, there was one devotee, this is during Prabhupada's time, Prabhupada was just walking and he saw one devotee coming towards him. And he was scanning some 3-4 very big books, of some acharyas and all. Prabhupada just smiled at him, and do you know what Prabhupada told him? Prabhupada said, he pointed at the books and he said, they will not take you back to Godhead. Now please understand, we have to understand the context. Don't quote Prabhupada wrong, because tomorrow somebody might start reading, Prabhupada said, this will not take you back to Godhead, so why should I read the Bhagavad Gita? Why should I read Srimad Bhagavatam? It's such a big volume. Why should I read Chaitanya Chaitra? No. The point that Prabhupada was trying to say was that these books should bring you to this platform of Mam Prapadyante. If they are not doing that, then these books will become useless. That's the point that Prabhupada was trying to make. It's not those books. It's the message of that book which brings you to this platform of Mam Prapadyante Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Then you go back to Godhead. So be very careful in understanding Prabhupada when he, because a lot of times, devotees tend to quote Prabhupada, but we are not very clear on in what context Prabhupada has said what. So this is an overall nutshell of Jnana Yoga. We want to move on. So Jnana Yoga must bring a person to this platform. Any knowledge must bring the practitioner to this platform of Mam Prapadyante. Prapadyante means, Mam means surrendering to Krishna. Let us move on to Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga, again, Chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains so wonderfully in very brief, because Jnana Yoga, that whole Ashtanga Yoga process is so elaborate. There are books and books and volumes of books of it. But Krishna very condensed way explains to Arjuna how that Jnana Yoga is practiced. So in that whole process, if you want to see, he explains how the person who wants to practice must practice celibacy, must be a brahmacharya, brahmachari, leave his house, go to a secluded place or in a forest, then he gets a nice place where he makes his asana, which is of deer skin and cloth and kusa grass. Then he has to sit on it. The seat must not be too high, the seat must not be too low, eyes must be half open, half closed. If it's half open, if it's fully closed, you go to sleep. If it's fully open, you'll see the tiger and you'll get scared. So he explains that whole process, that this yogi must sit in such a posture, his back is straight, his neck is straight, and then he starts inhaling and exhaling, and he explains all those details to him. Now in that also, in that process, after he talks about everything, that now he closes half eyes, half open, he's inhaling, exhaling and all, and he says, now this person must start meditating. Thinking of whom? Whom does he say that this person must now meditate on? Fix his whole focus on. Yukta asita mat paraha. On me, he says. In the 6th chapter, we'll go and see chapter, verse number 14. He ends, that's the last line of the 14th verse, where he says that this person's total focus must be on me. This is the perfection of Jnana Yoga, he says. And in another verse also he says, Yogi Namapi Sarveshu Madgate Nantaratmana Shraddhavan Bhajate Yoma Sumay Yuktatma Mataha. Who's the best of all the yogis, he says? Yogi Namapi Sarveshu, of all the yogis, he says, Yogi Namapi Sarveshu Madgate Nantaratmana, whose whole focus, meditation, his whole surrender is on me. Mat gate nantar atmana. Now what is a shraddhavan bhajate jo maam? With shraddha, with faith, this person worships me. Shraddhavan bhajate jo maam, samay yukta atma mataha. My mata, my opinion is that he is the best of all the yogis. So even Dhyan Yoga, where is the perfection of the Dhyan Yoga? It must bring you again to this platform. See, Dhruv, when he went into the forest, he did this whole meditation, Dhyana Yoga, he practiced Dhyana Yoga. And in 6 months, we know he attained perfection. But what was his meditation on? The Lord, the Supreme Lord. And that's why, you know, getting instructions from his guru Narad Muni, he attained, he saw the Lord face to face. First he saw the four armed form in his heart, and then that four armed form from the heart manifested externally right in front of his eyes. This is the perfection of Dhyan Yoga. And then we see examples of Saubhriya Muni, Vishwamitra Muni, so many other examples where after thousands of years of Dhyan, they couldn't attain it. So the key is this, Krishna says, that Yukta Asita Matpara, that the perfection of Dhyan Yoga is when its dovetail is directed towards me. And this Dhyan Yoga, as I just now said, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagwaneti, Shabdyate. So, Dhyan Yoga, the perfection of it is Paramatma within your heart. Gyan we saw is what? Brahma. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti. Paramatmeti is Dhyan Yoga. Perfection of Dhyan Yoga is when you see the Lord inside your heart in the four beautiful four-armed form. And He will manifest, as we saw in case of Dhruva Maharaj. And Bhagwan iti shabdyate. How is Bhagwan approached? How can Bhagwan be attained? By Bhakti Yoga. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. It's only by Bhakti, Krishna says. No other process. By Bhakti, Krishna says Bhaktya mam abhijanati. Only a devotee can understand it. Only a devotee can see me face to face. What to talk of understanding? So now we come to the third aspect, characteristics of Bhakti Yoga. This is what we had started last week, and I will try to go a bit fast so that we can complete it. We had covered up the first two parts. We'll cover up the third and the fourth part also today. So we were talking how Rupa Goswami has so wonderfully explained to us in the Nectar of Devotion characteristics of Bhakti Yoga. So we have that verse, Kleshagni Shubhada, Moksha Labhutta Krit Sudurlabha, Sandrananda Visheshtatma, Sri Krishna Karshani. So in this, there are six different characteristics that are explained, of which the first two, which we discussed last week, Kleshagni and Shubhada, these two are manifested, you can say, or you can say a devotee experiences it in the sadhana bhakti stage. Sadhana bhakti stage are the first three stages of devotional service, which I was explaining last week: adoshkadha, tatha sadhu sangha, and then bhajanakriya. This is sadhana. Because you see, in that whole ladder, what do we have to do as a devotee? Only these three things. We invest some faith, adoshkadha. Then, based on that faith, what we do? Sadhu Sangha. And then that sadhu teaches us some kriya, bhajana kriya. We practice that kriya. After that, everything is beyond our control. Anartha Nivriti is a result of these three. Everything after that, be it nishtha, be it asakti, be it prem, be it bhav, all this is a fallout. We cannot do Anartha Nivriti. We cannot do in the sense that physically you can put your hand inside your heart and clean out all the anartha nivriti. No. From anartha nivriti all the way up to prema is a fallout of these three things. We, the devotee, has to do these three things. Of which, that is what, now when he does these three things, in the sadhana bhakti stage, he will experience these two things. Kleshagni and Shubhada. So, we had explained it last week. I'm not going to go into too much detail. I'll just give you a very quick refresher. Kleshagni means, Gni means destroying, relief from Klesh. Klesh means what? Material sufferings, distress. Like somebody, if you analyze, if you want to tell somebody to take up to Bhakti, this itself should be such a nice driver. Can anybody can anybody put up their hand and say, Prabhu, I don't have any distress, I don't have any suffering, so it's okay, I'm good. No. Krishna has established in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam Upataya Punar Janma Dukhalayam. Krishna is certifying this material world as Dukhalayam. And in another verse, he says, this word is Asukham, Anityam.
So in Dukhalam, it's natural, everybody is dukhi, everybody is miserable, everybody is in distress, everybody is suffering. So the first, you can say, the first experience of bhakti, when a person starts practicing bhakti, you know, when we sow a seed and a plant starts coming out, the stem comes out and we see two very small buds or small leaves, you can call them, coming out. So this bhakti lata bij, when it's sowed in our heart, the first two, you can call it leaves or bud, whatever you want to call it, are kleshagni and shubhadam. This somebody will experience nearly, you can say, immediately. That all the distresses, he gets relief from material distresses, sufferings. And Uddhav tells in the Uddhav Gita, Krishna tells Uddhav in the Uddhav Gita that this devotional service or bhakti is like a fire. It's like a forest fire. You know, you all have seen in US, we have so many forest fires in West Coast and all. Forest fire means it burns up everything, irrespective. The fire doesn't discriminate, oh, I'll leave this tree out, this is a bush, or this is such a wonderful plant. No. It just burns on everything. Similarly, what bhakti does is, that is why what does Krishna say in chapter 18? How does he end the Bhagavad Gita? He says, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. If you do this, what will happen? Aham tvam sarva pape bhyo. Sarva. Sarva means what? All. Sarva pape bhyo moksha shami. I'll relieve you from all, not selective. Because this klesh that we are talking about, they come in different forms, layers, you can say. See, the cause of our klesh in Rupa Goswami, I explain, is ignorance, avidya, where we don't have knowledge. And because we don't have knowledge, the living entity is so inclined. He has these sinful inclinations. Ajamel, he just had this inclination from where he saw what happened, you know. He just saw one fight. He got this inclination to do something, which Rupa Goswami explained as kutam. And this kutam then this goes and becomes bija. It becomes a desire. From an inclination, it becomes a desire. And then from that desire, what happens? You act on that desire, which is called a sinful action or a unwarranted or an unneeded wrong acted action you perform, which is called karma. And then when you perform an activity, what will happen? You're going to get a reaction. You're going to suffer for it, which is called klesh. Klesh is the outcome of this sequence. So, and then the reactions that are coming, they can be at any stage. Prarabdha, aprarabdha, Rupa Goswami explained. Some which have already manifested, some will manifest in the future. They are sitting in the storehouse for the correct time to manifest. So what does this bhakti do, devotional service do? It does not only destroy the reactions which have manifested. It destroys the reactions which are in store. It destroys all your, inclinations. Desires. Because see, the inclination is still there, those desires are still there. Even if Krishna destroys all your reactions, you'll again go and do it. Then again more reactions. Then again Krishna has to burn off those reactions. So that's why what bhakti does is, it's going to go to the root. And what is the root actually? Avidya. It's ignorance. Out of ignorance, we have all these inclinations, desires, and we do these wrong activities, we get the wrong results. That is why, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Tadami buddhi, buddhi yogam tam. I give them buddhi yoga. I give, tadami. I give them the right understanding, the right intelligence. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. Buddhi yoga, of course, is bhakti yoga also. Yena mam upayanti te. His ignorance is dissipated. Now he can see things clearly. He can see black as black and white as white. And then all your sinful inclinations, tendencies, everything are destroyed. And as I said in my last class, the dissipation can happen at different levels. See, sometimes it can happen at the external level. Like I gave you an example for in case of Vasudev. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him, his leprosy was gone. Right? In case of Kubja, her beauty came back. She got her beauty back. In case of Sudama, he was very poor, he became very wealthy. So these are at the external level. Now then it may happen at a very consciousness level also. See, Sridhar Kolhapur, she was so poor. And the Lord could have given him, you know, just like Sudama. But in his case, what happened? He himself told Krishna, I don't want. You know, in the Mahaprabhu Leela, Krishna was offering him so much. He said, I don't want. It should just be a disturbance for me. So in his case, it was at the consciousness level. Right? So at different levels, this avidya will be totally destroyed. This is the meaning of klesha agni. Klesha will be destroyed agni. And as I was last week explaining, I think I sounded as if klesha agni. Well, it's agni means the fire. It's the fire of bhakti yoga which destroys all the klesha. But agni means destroys all the klesha. Now we come to the next characteristic which Rupa Goswami explained, which is shubhada. Da means to give and Shubha means what? Auspiciousness. See, one thing is that all our, like the gifts of kleshas are destroyed. Okay? Now the next thing is that Krishna, I mean Bhakti Yoga does not just doesn't destroy all the kleshas and the misery. It awards you something. If only distresses are destroyed, are dissipated, it can be, I'll give you an example, like suppose if you have a bank balance of minus 50,000. I've given it before also, I think. If you have a bank balance of minus 50,000 and your bank balance comes to zero, are you a happy person? Relatively, yes. Because you say, yes, Prabhu, yesterday it was minus 50,000, now it's zero. No. A bank balance is supposed to be plus. You should or you will be happy when you see a plus 20,000. So my kleshas are gone. Yes, good, you know, all my this are gone. But then I'm being awarded something now. What? Shubhada. Life becomes auspicious. Now you are happy. You're being awarded happiness. That's what Prabhupada, when he said, "Na chant Hare Krishna and be happy." Correct? So all auspiciousness comes in our life. So a person can only be happy if there's auspiciousness. If there's inauspiciousness, you cannot be happy. Nothing will go wrong, right your way. Nothing will go right. So how can you be happy? And then we explained last week that how, when we are talking of Shubhada, then we explained how Prabhupada says that bhakti benefits everybody. So this auspiciousness, it's not only for you. Anybody who comes in contact with you will also become happy and auspicious. And we gave examples how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jharkhand forest. Animals also who came in contact with him became happy. Srila Prabhupada coming to US, just coming in contact with him, people were so happy, auspicious. And then bhakti attracts everyone. It's not only one person, one color, one grade, one creed. Everyone. And it produces good qualities in the person. Srila Prabhupada would say always, right? When Srila Prabhupada was asked, how can one recognize your followers? How will we know who are your followers? He said, they will be perfect gentlemen. They'll be perfect gentlemen. So this is what bhakti does. It bestows superior happiness, a higher taste, as we say, on everybody. That lower taste goes away. Because see, you cannot give up something lower unless you don't get something higher. This is what Shubhada means. That bhakti is awarding you something higher, the higher taste. You cannot give up the lower taste until you've not got the param drishtva nivartate. You have to get some higher taste to give up the lower taste. I'll give you an example. See, there was a person on the road, very poor, very hungry. and it had been 3 days, he had got no food. So on the verge of death, he said, now nothing is going to happen to me, I'm going to die. So suddenly, he sees just down the lane a dog. And the dog has a very, very dry chapati. You know, somebody has thrown a dry chapati and the dog takes the chapati in his mouth. And the chapati is so dry and hard that even the dog can't eat it. He just throws the chapati and the dog walks away. Now here's this beggar, the poor man, standing there. And he sees that chapati. And what he does, he goes and picks it up. He thinks, this is my last hope. Anyway, I'm going to die. Either I die of hunger or I eat this chapati and die. It makes no difference. At least it's a small hope that if I survive for a few hours, somebody might give me food. So he's holding on to this chapati in his hand. Now one jnani comes there and gives him a big lecture on it. Hey, you're a fool. How can you eat this chapati? You're going to die. This chapati is diseased. It has no nutrition. It's coming from the mouth of a dog. What are you doing? That guy says, anyway, I'm going to die, so makes no difference. The jnani walks up. Now comes a devotee. What does the devotee do? He doesn't even utter a word. He just brings in his hand a tray. In a tray, there is a bowl with vegetable palau, chapatis, sabji, raita, halwa, a juice. He doesn't speak a word. All that he does is he keeps this tray in front of this beggar, holds his hand and walks away. Now my question to all of y'all is, what does the beggar do? I know it's a very foolish question. What does the beggar do? He starts eating, right? But before eating, what does he do? He throws that dry chapati into a corner. He doesn't need it anymore. He's got the higher taste. He's got the halwa. He's going to eat the halwa. When you get the higher taste, then lower taste goes automatically. You throw the dry chapati away. You lose taste. The same, this material arrangements that are giving us some perverted taste, some perverted happiness, they will be gone when we just start. And this is just the starting of bhakti yoga. This is all in the sadhana bhakti stage. That the practitioner starts getting some taste. Now we'll move on. After the first two that we discussed, first is pleshagni, destruction, all miseries are destroyed. Then Shubhadha, auspiciousness comes into the life of the practitioner. Then the next two, which are Moksha Labhu Taprit and Sudur Labha. These two are experienced in the Bhava Bhakti stage at a higher level now. First, as I said, is Sadhana Bhakti, the first three stages. At a higher level, at the Bhava Bhakti stage, the practitioner will experience these two characteristics. Now what is happening is that the same happiness that you were experiencing in the first two states, it gets a bit more condensed. Moksha Labhu Taprit means what? Labhu means tiny, means insignificant. So moksha, which is like, you know, like the goal of so many practitioners, right? Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Moksha is the highest you considered as the highest. This person, he didn't, you know, the value of moksha is totally out of the window. It is bhakti. When he starts experiencing this auspiciousness, this happiness in the first two stages, the third thing is that immediately, it is.
Hare Krishna. Are you there? Hare Krishna, Mataji. Yes, Mataji, we can hear you. Yes, Mataji, we can hear you. Mataji, up to 24.79, Mataji. Yeah, I have noted down, Mataji. I'll post in the group. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no problem.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu dropped off the call. I was on the YouTube message. I was hearing from YouTube and the call is going on. Okay, let me message you, Mataji.
Yeah, next
time.
Maybe it might be power off, but sometimes Prabhu was telling there is power off, yes, sometimes in India. So power off the internet maybe also is there, yes. It's a
oh, but YouTube live is going on, Mataji.
YouTube class is going on, Mataji?
Yeah, I was hearing, I was sitting outside and hearing YouTube class.
Oh, that's why it's not the call anymore, Mataji.
See, Mataji, still the class is going, Prabhuji.
See, we see in the pastime of Narada Yogi, right? In his previous life, what did Krishna do?
Oh, Krishna. What do I do? I'm calling her, his wife, but his wife is not listening.
Oh, this is
the
YouTube class, Mataji.
Mataji,
did you put any YouTube sound just now?
Yes, I'll put YouTube sound, Mataji.
Yeah, you can put that sound on. It's fine, Mataji. The sound is okay. Yes. In the class, we can hear.
Okay, then I can open YouTube live here, Mataji. We can hear it. Okay then, what can we do?
Keep passing to Prabhuji also, let him know he is in part of the call.
Okay, okay.
No. Actually, that's only for his bhakta, for his devotee. Just have. Sudur Labha. We can talk so much about it, but I'm just trying to finish the last two also in 5 minutes, we'll finish. Then the last two stages are the higher stages. In the Prema Bhakti stage. Where other happinesses are, happiness is also lost. What are the two last two characteristics? Sandrananda Visheshatma and Shri Krishna Akarshana Ichyasa.
Yeah. I told Mataji, I told, they are going to set that call.
Okay. Just 1 minute, I'm dialing back into the call, please.
I'm sorry, I don't know why I dropped off the call, so I'll just wind up now in the next 5 minutes. The last two stages are Sandrananda Vishesh. Akarshanichasa. In bhakti, in this, now we are at the prema stage, the highest level. One experiences the happiness, I mean the experiences are now going on, becoming more and more concentrated, more and more condensed. At this platform, it's totally transcendental now. Right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam Pratipadam Purna Amrita Swadhanam. At every moment, the Amrita, the Swad that you are getting is complete and it's new. It's not the same thing, you know, every day, oh, I have to get up in the morning now, it's Mangala Aarti time. Oh, or, you know, today the gopis will come now and Krishna knows. No. At every stage it's a new experience. It's totally concentrated experience. It's a totally condensed bliss. And for most of us, at least for myself, I don't even have much I won't say understanding, but this is a very high level, you can say. This is close, it's the perfection of Bhakti Yoga. And the last one is Shri Krishna Akarshani Chasa.
this is the only means to attract Krishna, bhakti. In its perfection state, it attracts Krishna to what degree that, as I said, Krishna becomes subordinate to his devotees. We know, right, in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, in the whole pastime of that Rasalila, at the end, when Krishna had disappeared and the gopis, you know, they were searching for him, and when he comes back, what does Krishna actually tell the gopis? He tells them that actually I have nothing, there's no way that I can repay your love. Your love is so great. Now imagine, this is the Supreme Lord. He's accepting, he's saying, there's no way that I can repay or I can reciprocate to what you have. You'll just be happy with what you have. Imagine, the Lord becomes subordinate. How the Lord is so much attracted, the only way to attract the Lord. You know, Prabhupada always used to give this example of Cupid attracts everyone, correct? Cupid is attracted by Krishna. That's why Krishna's name is one name is what? Madan Mohan. Madan ko jo mohit kar deta. Madan is Cupid, Mohan means who's attracted. So Krishna can attract Madan also. So he's Madan Mohan. But this same Krishna, when he comes in front of Radharani, what happens? This Madan Mohan, who has attracted Cupid, Cupid is attracting everybody in this whole creation. That Madan Mohan is so attracted by Radharani. And that is why Radharani's one name is Madan Mohan Mohini. She can control Krishna. This is bhakti. This is the perfection, the highest state where Krishna becomes a subordinate to the devotee. He's ready to do anything for his devotees. For the Pandavas, he can become a charioteer. Imagine, becoming a charioteer is not a very, you know, I was explaining yesterday to some devotee that it's not a very hectic position. You know, as a charioteer, it is explained in the Mahabharata, Krishna had to bathe the cow, the horses. That was the role of a charioteer. He had to, Arjuna used to get down the chariot before, and then Krishna will get down. That's the niyam. But he becomes. Why? Because of the love. So bhakti, this is the parakas. This is the perfection of bhakti. So of course, as I told last week also, so much can be, you know, for each of these characters, we can nearly have a one class. But I said, we just have a very high level overview of what bhakti is all about. And then this verse that we just now read, it is explained that there are three ways to attain the lotus feet of the Absolute Krishna. There is the process of philosophical speculation, jnana, by which one approaches the brahmeti. Then you have yoga, paramatmeti realization is there. And in bhakti yoga, bhagwaneti. Bhagwan is inclusive of the other two also. It's not that somebody might say, oh, that Bhagwan will be deprived of Brahman and Paramatma. No. Bhagwan is all inclusive. Each of these has its different characteristics. We very briefly try to understand some aspects of all these processes. Thank you very much. I know I went a bit, I think it's more than an hour or something. Please forgive me. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Oh,
so I'd just like to open up if anybody has any comments, any questions, any experiences which anybody wants to share. You know, everybody has been practicing Bhakti Yoga for quite some time. If anybody wants to share their experiences, please feel free.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dana Pranam, our glories to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for your wonderful class, Prabhu. Prabhuji, did you finish till 79, Prabhu? Or waiting with
Yes, the work that we ended was at 79, Sri Krishna Prapti Hetu Trivida Sadhana.
Yes, thank you so much, Prabhuji. It was very nice class. We didn't feel it's like 1 hour, Prabhu, more than 1 hour. Thank you so much. We also missed little bit. You dropped your call in the 5 minutes in the middle. But it was very nice. Thank you, Prabhu, for your intercession. Does any devotee have any question or comment for Prabhuji?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Such a beautiful class, Prabhu. You have put everything together. You have told the 3 stages of bhakti and also 3 stages of devotion life and everything. Everything, Prabhu, and that has
stage of happiness.
Stages of happiness that, you know, minus and plus, you know, people think like that. And how you gave the example of that beggar and that pastime was like you are putting that analogy, right? That one is very nice. When that beggar sees that full plate of prasadam, he will just throw that old chapati that he has had. Very nice, Prabhuji. Very nice examples and very beautiful class. Thank you so much, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Madhuri. So I think, Madhuri, we can end the class since nobody has questions. Vancha kalpataru bhyascha.